Hello everyone, this is Eke Starraga, and we're going to talk about the RISC-V support on the Geeks Bootstrap, or at least the bits I've been working on during this last year. So I'm a telecommunication engineer, I'm a freelance engineer or programmer working at lnq.tech, which is just my website. I'm a Geeks user and a contributor, so many things we're going to talk about today involve Geeks in one way or the other. And maybe you remember me from the last year. I gave this talk in this talk you can see here, as a recapitulation of my last year working on RISC-V. And as the result of that talk, it comes what I'm going to introduce to you today. So last year I asked for the NLNet grant, which I mentioned in that talk, and we didn't know if it was given or not at that time, but now I can say the grant was given, and I've been working for that grant as a part-time during 1 year, and this is the work I'm going to show you today. So the work was based on the bootstrapping process of Geeks, or in general for other distros, for the RISC-V architecture. And yeah, we're going to talk about what I did, what did I leave for the future, how it can be improved, and these kind of things. So if you want to read a longer version, you have here in the bottom my blog. And in my blog, there's a series of posts describing every single commit I did. So maybe read that one if you want to go into the details. In this talk, we're going to just to take a look to a couple of these commits in a very high level way. So let's introduce the bootstrapping issue and why this is important, right? So we have free software and we love it, right? Because it lets us audit our programs. We can read the source code of our programs and we can check if we like what they do or if we don't like it. But when we start to have software distributions, some other problems appear. For example, If a distribution maintainer or someone working in the distribution decides to replace the binaries that are given to us through the package manager with other binaries that have some kind of vulnerabilities or stuff like that, they could do that. And we have no way to match the source code we suppose that binary is using. We can't really match it to the binary. So we don't know this relation, right? In Geeks, we have reproducibility. So if the Geeks maintainers, for a reason, imagine they decide to give us the wrong binaries, we can always challenge the binaries from the substitutes, and we can check if the result of those binaries, the binaries they are giving to us, and the ones we can build ourselves are the same. That's interesting, and also it's very interesting in many other areas that we're not going to cover, but this is only protecting us from people being evil. But sometimes a program can be evil too. Imagine this compiler, this evil compiler that has sunglasses, it decides to introduce vulnerabilities or malware in our final binaries. We can think that as we compile the software ourselves, the binary is going to have only the functionalities that we can see in the source code, but in fact the compiler can be introducing new functionalities that may harm us as a user. So the reproducibility here will only ensure that we are going to reproduce this environment here and make the same binary, but that binary, if the compiler is corrupt, in the reproducibility case, we are just going to reproduce the same corrupt binary. So we need something else to make sure that the compilers we use are not corrupt, because we don't really know. And this kind of attack is described by Ken Thompson, one of the authors of Unix, in a paper that is called Reflections on Trusting Trust. So you can take a look into it. There's a link here to how this one's done in real life. So we have to remember that the compilers are also programs. So this issue is recursive. If we want, we could make a compiler that introduces this corruption in the next program that is built using it. And if the next program is a compiler, it would introduce this to reproduce itself. So the problem might be here in this compiler, but might be here, and this corrupt compiler can introduce the vulnerabilities to the next one. So the problem we have here is much deeper. It's a recursive problem because the compiler have to be compiled. So what's the exit point of this recursion, right? So imagine we could make a compiler. Imagine we are just in the realm of the ideas and the imagination. If we could make a compiler that is just source, that doesn't have to be processed. So if we write something in a language that doesn't have to be processed, that is source directly, for example, that would mean we don't need to add this arrow here. So the conversion between the source and the compiler would be just one line with no extra things. So we could break this thing. So we're going to mention some projects that do that, and we're going to introduce that. How does it work in real life? So that way we could break this problem, right? This recursion would be stopped. So in practice, the GNU Linux distributions, they are just giving us many pre-built binaries, including bash, ECC, and many others. So they have to trust all those binaries, as they don't have any kind of malware inside, right? They are trusting the ones who build those programs. And not only that, they are trusting also the compilers that build those programs. So there are many layers of trust there, because the compilers that compile those software, they are also being trusted. So it's really hard to know who is compiling each thing, and where does the compiler they are using is coming from, right? So there are many issues with that. So what we know in practice is that we can compile most of the world using a powerful compiler as ECC. So we can base our research or our story on GCC. And once we fix the bootstrapability issue in GCC, as everything or mostly everything comes from a C program or from a C compiler, we can bootstrap everything from there. So the problem is we can't use a pre-built compiler for building GCC because of the thing I've been talking about during this minute. So the key here is who is compiling the compiler, right? So if we go to GCC, if we want to compile the world, we have a dependency, which is obviously GCC. But GCC also requires a compiler to be built. And normally that compiler is going to be what? GCC, a previous version of that. And that GCC is also going to require another compiler who is probably going to be GCC. And that is also going to need another compiler, which is also going to be a GCC, and so on. So if we follow these points, we are just realizing that we don't really know who built the first GCC in this list. And probably the first one was just a program written in assembly or whatever during the 80s. We don't really know. So we have to break this recursion somewhere, right? So there are also a lot of libraries here in the middle. It's kind of complex, right? So we have to make a project that is a very simple compiler that's able to start this chain of compilations and just break everything, adding one point that doesn't really need to be trusted, right? That we can audit. And this exists already, and this is what we have in gigs nowadays. So we have the world, which is, with the world we mean all the packages in the world, more or less. We have a modern GCC that is able to build most of that. We have a GCC 7.5 building the modern GCC. We have a GCC 4 building that GCC 7. We have a GCC .95 building that. We have a TinyC compiler. In this case, you see we are not using GCC anymore. So we use a TinyC compiler, which is a very small C compiler. We use that to build this GCC. In our case, we are also using in the middle here somewhere, a bootstrapable TinyC compiler, which is a simplified version of TinyCC, which is buildable using GNU Mesh. So we can build it using, we can build it using GNU Mesh. And we also have a stage 0 POSIX, which is a set of tools that are written in directly in source code. So we don't really need to trust any binary. And from there, we can build a very simple compiler, right? So with that simple compiler, we can just build GNU mesh, and with that, build a world, right? So let me introduce these two projects, because maybe you don't know them very well. The others are very easy to understand. They are just GCC, a C compiler, and a tiny CC, which is also a C compiler. But these two are a little bit complex. So the case of the GNU mesh, GNU mesh is a project that has like two legs, right? One of the legs is an scheme interpreter, and the other leg is a C compiler. So the C compiler is designed so it's able to build the scheme interpreter, and the scheme interpreter is designed so it can interpret the C compiler, right? So in the end, what we have is an scheme interpreter written in C and a C compiler written in a scheme, and they are self-hosted, right? No, self-hosted, no. They are mutually hosted. So the scheme interpreter can interpret the C compiler and the other way around. So they don't rely on themselves, but in the other. And the goal of this is help to create a full bootstrap for Unix-like operating systems. And this is what they are doing in the case of Qix. Also, the scheme interpreter is written in, as you see, in simple C, and the C compiler is written in a scheme. So the most important part in this description that I just copied from the website, and you can read more there, is that they can be bootstrapped using Mesh2Planet and MeshCC tools. These tools are also part of State Zero POSIX, and State Zero POSIX is that mini compiler thingy I told you that is literally source code. So it starts in a very small seed. You can see here, like it's a 256 byte seed written directly in binary in a little bit weird way to make it easier to read, but it's literally binary. So we write that in binary, and that is small enough to be checked by the user to make sure that binary is correct, and then from that we can start building small tools until we build something that is near to a very simple C compiler. So once we reach that, we can build GNU mesh using that. And from mesh, we are able to build a much bigger C compiler as a tiny CC. And from that one, we can start building old GCCs, right? So here you see, this one is relying on the kernel, but there are other projects that don't even trust the kernel. So that's very interesting too. So wrapping up, there's no corrupt compiler if there's only source code. Think about that. So that's how we break the problem or how we break that recursion. So in the case of the RISC-V support, this is the status of the RISC-V support 1 year ago when I started working on this. We had like the work